Hello.
Hello.
I'm Calvin.
I'm Justin.
And please,
we have a message for you. Okay, one more time.
I'm Calvin. Hello.
Hello.
I'm Calvin.
I'm Justin.
Please.
We have a message for you.
Fucking hell. Okay.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Calvin.
I'm Justin, and we have a message for you.
Please like.
Please rate.
And subscribe to this podcast.
We will love you so much. We already do. We'll love you even more.
Yeah.
We're going to start the episode. Bye.
Bye. 1, 2, 3, 4. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. No, I mean like really, 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 really Christian. Hello and welcome to We Were Christian Kids. I'm Calvin Arcinia.
I'm Justin Randall.
What are we talking about today?
Oh, well, today I guess we're getting right into it. Today we are talking about, for lack of a better term, evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
And how we were obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And how we were essentially the worst. Yeah. We were the worst. Yes. I actually got a comment on one of my posts from someone that I haven't seen or talked to since high school, and they said the words, "You are literally the worst." Mm-hmm. And it was in reference to my extreme Christianness and telling people they were going to hell. And the fact of the matter is that's something that we did, right?
Yeah.
And because we thought that people were going to hell.
Right. And we were told that the evidence of our faith was totally like in relationship with telling other people, that they were going to hell or that they should avoid hell at all costs.
Yeah, so we probably didn't say it as direct, like in a, like as out of habit. We probably weren't like, "You're going to hell," because we wanted to be tactical about it, right?
Right. Strategic.
Strategic.
We were trained to do this.
Yeah. Really, we were. We called it witnessing. Who out there witnessed? Can I get a witness, in fact?
No, high school was, in that time, one of the things that I've discovered, wait, hold on, let's go back. Here's the thing. I think it should be said that us putting this out into the world, first of all, wow, can't believe that anybody's listening to this at all. It was kind of a little bit of a funny dream to even start a podcast, kind of just like we talk a lot and I think we come to some interesting conclusions, and I think that we get to have conversations that I don't get to have a lot with a lot of other people. And and then it came to mind that maybe other people had experienced some of these things, and that, again, that I would love to find a community of people. And my thought was that, other hundreds, thousands, if not millions of other people have at least shared the experience of being hurt by the church. And I haven't heard a lot of these stories coming out of the mouths of queer people in particular. And so that's kind of, what I think we were thinking of when we first just hit the record button on our normal conversations. That being said, I don't want us to or to come across that we have answers or that we are experts or that even our accounts of stories that happened in the past are 100% accurate, because how can we know all the sides, especially something that happened 10 years ago? But what we have, or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But what we have is our memories. And, for people who want to comment or say and talk about their experience, they are totally valid and justified to do that. And I can speak for myself that I want to write the things that I did wrong. and I'm working through this as a way to reconcile my past and to not be afraid of it anymore. And I know that there are people out there that I have hurt with my words, and that I have tarnished our relationship because of the faith that I believed in, and I'm sorry, and if I can make it right, please let me do that. And if, you know, never hearing about me ever again, or hearing my face, you know, seeing my face or hearing my voice ever again is the thing that you need to heal from that experience, then like, do that. But I just, I don't want my legacy or the memories of me to hurt people, and I don't want who I am presently to do that either. So, yeah, not perfect, but life is messy, and talking about it is how we can manage it, and or at least how we can get closer to managing it. And that is something that I'm trying to do with my life now.
Yeah, and I can echo the sort of like the two-sided nature to this podcast. And for me, it was like when we started out this podcast, which was just a few weeks ago, but the thing that was forefront in my mind was how I have been hurt by the church. I have been hurt by the church. And it's, you know, been brought to my attention that I, as the church, was also hurting other people. And like, so I was the perpetrator as well as the victim, so to speak. And I am also sorry. And it's like, it's one of those things with like, if I could go back in time and change that, oh my gosh, I so would. I really wish that I could, because it feels like a lifetime ago, and it's painful to realize that I was so, I mean, quite frankly, I was so self-righteous and self-centered and closed-minded, and I mean, for a lot of this, but not all of it. I was a child, but some of it, I was like early adulthood. But yeah, I like what you said about wanting to like right those wrongs and remain open to that, and honest about how that is a part of my past.
Our stories. Yeah. One person wrote it and asked in our DMs on Twitter. We love questions, and we love challenging questions in particular. And they asked if we were still practicing our faith, and said that by listening to the podcast so far, they weren't able to say, you know, sometimes it sounded like we were, and sometimes it sounded like we
weren't. Yeah, basically, sometimes you sound Christian, sometimes you sound like you're not Christian.
And the answer is that, I'll speak for myself. The answer is no.
Yeah, that's what I was going to scream. No!
However, I cannot honestly say that I don't believe in any of the principles taught by Jesus. The ideas of forgiveness, the ideas of helping the poor and the poor in spirit, the ideas of an, you know, quote-unquote eternal impact of our life on the planet. There's some of these things that are culturally relevant because it's what I grew up in, and I can't say that I'm completely alleviated of those notions. And so I'm working through that. Do I believe in the risen Lord, as it were, that I will end up in heaven? No, I don't think so. I really fantasize about my energy and essence just kind of going into the ground and re-entering the stream of energy that is existence. And that seems like the most beautiful and poetic ending that could be for life. I don't believe that, and I was just talking to my partner last night about it, like that once I, at the moment of death, that I will enter into this other room where people or angels or beings or sentient things are there to go over every single minutia and choice of my life. I don't think that's going to happen. And that is the crux of the Christianity that I grew up around, was everything you do in life, you will have to speak for at the moment of death. Whether that's immediately in the timeline of our death, or as we'll probably talk in the weeks to come about eschatology, to happen at some later date, and in the in between time, we're just asleep. Again, we'll talk about that maybe later, but I don't believe in any of that. But I think that Jesus, as he was a revolutionary to say that A, religion hurts people, and we should really cut that shit out. And B, look at the heart of somebody, not just their riches. And mm-hmm. I'm speaking to Joel Osteen. don't look at these things.
He will be listening.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
That don't look at just somebody's riches to determine if they are blessed or if they are good, because those things are not determinants of somebody's goodness. And that's a Jesus principle. And so there are some of those things that I'm not going to throw out the baby with the bathwater about the teachings of somebody who did have wisdom, so much so that he has had followers for all these millennia, or at least 2 millennia. Anyway, the point is, yeah. No, I don't subscribe to all of the teachings of Christianity. I do think there's wisdom in Christianity, just like there's wisdom in other faiths and religions. This summer I got to have a cursory glance at Buddhism and Taoism, and I think that there's some beautiful things there, and I'm still learning, and I'm open. And I would hope that everyone wants to collect as much wisdom and information and different insights and perspectives to the world as we can, and not be closed off to learning new things.
Yeah. That message came at like such an interesting time, because I had just had therapy and subtle brag, and I talked about the podcast in therapy, and I was like, I am torn, because I feel like we have like a post-Christian podcast, and I don't know exactly where I fall on that spectrum, and I don't want to sound like I am diametrically opposed to Christianity entirely, because I'm not. So like the door is still kind of open for me, but do I identify as a Christian? No. Do I still identify, like you said, with the principles of Jesus that were like freaking instilled into me, like in my youth? Yes, and those principles are things like turn the other cheek, like loving people even when they're shitty to you, and like trying to have a servant's attitude, like serving people even if they're shitty to. There's like a theme here, which I'm terrible at, by the way, and just like those types of teachings, and I believe in a higher power still. Like I don't know that I believe in, like, the word God isn't even that useful to me anymore, because I think it's, for me personally, been so like dampened down with other meanings that I don't connect with. But like I think that there is something greater moving through the universe, connecting things, inspiring love, inspiring change and hope. Like that is what I think. So I don't identify as Christian, but kind of like you said, I do identify with like some of those higher principles. And I even think that like Jesus was probably pretty great, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I could be missing something right here in this moment, but I don't think there's much about Jesus himself that sucked. Like...
You're saying about the about like I am the gate. So there's these some claims, because I remember
there's no way to the Father except through me.
Exactly. So there's this like exclusionary words that he would say that are in the red letters.
That's fair.
that pastors that I sat under for a few years would say either he was a crazy man or he was God, and so. When you ask that, those are things I'm thinking about. So do I believe in every word of Jesus? I don't know. Do I think that we have, well, do I believe in every word of Jesus? If those are the things that he said, then no. Do I believe he had great things he talked about and taught about how to exist as a human with other humans? Yes, that was there. Do I believe that everything in the Bible is infallible? Of course not. Do I believe that scripture referencing other scripture to prove its logic is a logical argument? No.
No. Okay, but okay, you say of course not. I'm like, but did we believe this wholeheartedly for
yes!
7 years? Yes, we well, did.
Yeah, and even longer.
Yeah.
I mean, parts of it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so a part of faith is in Christianity, Westernized evangelical Christianity, that they really prioritize is the Great Commission, which is go out and make disciples and do what I did. And and so people take that very, very seriously. And I took that very, very seriously.
We are people.
And we are people. We are those people. We were those people.
Yeah.
And a part of, you know, I wouldn't say that we were guilted into it, or if it was just like we should feel like this is our honor to carry on the legacy of Jesus, to make disciples of our own. But a part of Christianity for us was to go out and oh my God, we have to tell them. There's two stories I want to get to today. Mm-hmm. First thing I want to talk about is that morning at school.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Front second of my mind. Thing,
second thing I want to talk about is when you came out to me.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that got real.
Just I mean, got it, real. It is real.
It is real. You're like, it was real. It is real.
This podcast is real.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that morning first. Why don't you start?
Okay. I mean, I think that morning was pretty.
When was it?
Emblematic of our evangelical drive.
And even the conflict of us at that time.
Yeah. There was conflict within the. Yeah. There were. Yeah. So.
Within the Christians of the school.
Within the craziness, there was craziness. Yeah. And so we were we were seniors in high school.
Mm-hmm.
We were leaders with two other people. One was our very, well, it doesn't matter. They were both close friends, to be honest. And we were leading the Bible study, and we were very intense about it. We had marketing materials, basically, and branding. And
we developed a logo.
We had a merchandise. Logo that we were spray painting onto shirts and backpacks. And we had like up to 80 people coming at one point. We had a PA system. We had people in charge of snacks.
Hot breakfast, coffee.
Thursday. We might do a whole episode about this Bible study, actually. But
it was a production.
It was a production, and we took it seriously. And our goal, I would say we had two goals. Strengthen the faith of believers and witness, like that term I said before, to non-believers so that they might be, quote-unquote, saved from hell. And like as we mentioned, even within our ranks, there was some dissent. We had another one of our comrades was a little more militaristic about his style of evangelism and his approach to it. And he was truly approaching it as if it were life or death, I would say.
Immediate.
And very immediate. And basically what he did was at this Bible study, which we usually just had like someone share their story and we sang songs and it was pretty lighthearted. He like took the mic from here?
Yeah. So this morning we had originally met in the choir room, and then, and it's so interesting to talk about this now because thinking about being in a room.
I thought we were in the gym.
No, originally. Not that day.
Like back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, so we had outgrown the choir room, and we were now in the gym. Mm-hmm. And we had been in the gym for several weeks, and we had a PA system that we were borrowing from a church. And I was making a zine every week with the lyrics of the songs and the scripture that we would go over. And I'd print those out on Wednesday night after church and get those typed out and then have them available for everybody on Thursday mornings. And this particular Thursday morning, we had invited another person to come up and speak. Do you remember that?
It
wasn't just our close friend. It was somebody else.
Okay.
So they came up and we had guests and we were trying to be very diplomatic and being like, you know, anybody can come up and speak if we know them and whatever. So this guy had the spirit of Lord came upon him to tell everybody who was in that room, which is about
not the guests, the friend who helped people. Run the Bible study.
No, the guest. Oh. It was the guest that did this.
Okay. Well, now we're...
He said...
Might we say this was like 87 years ago? So.
I was up in front of everyone, so I remember. And this is like one. I mean, you probably.
I just want to know the name of the person. But I know the name of the person, right? That was our guest.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Here, continue. You can bleep this out. It was.
Oh. Okay.
So he was up there. Gave him the microphone.
Okay. Yes.
And said, if you believe in the gospel of Jesus, then you would go out to the commons area where all of our friends are, and you would go get them and bring them back into this room, and then I'm going to deliver the message of Jesus Christ to them.
It was him who said it?
Yes.
He, okay, and this person, just for the record, if you met him on the street, he is so calm and unassuming. And
so like, unassuming.
Comes off as very shy.
Super shy.
So perhaps that's why my memory won't even pick it up.
He's the one who used to pick me up and take me to church every week, because I stopped going to church with my parents when I was about 14 or 15 years old. As soon as he got his driver's permit or license or whatever, he was the one to take me to church every single week. And sometimes at school too. And then it was you.
Yes. Then I got my car. Well, then we met each other.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's the important part though. The person that was speaking said, go get people.
Go get them.
From the commons before school.
So people would arrive before school. School started what? 8:15 on Thursdays. And so people would arrive at 7:45, 8 o'clock. They would go get their little packet of powdered donuts and a milk and gab until school started. And so, and we would arrive there at what? 6:30 or something?
Yes. Insane. Early.
Yeah. And get there and set up and do all the things. And so people were out there. We were meeting. We were singing. We were worshiping. After worship, he told us, go out to the commons. Go get the people. And what happened thereafter, I didn't touch or talk to a single person, but I went out and witnessed it. And people were dragging people by their backpacks.
Yeah, grabbing them. Yeah, or their hands. And come. Just come in here. Just come in here for right now.
Right.
Like, that's what they were saying. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I can't remember what I did. Did I just go out with you and look? I didn't bring anyone in.
No, me neither.
But
my skin is crawling. This is so gross. Yeah, okay.
So we honestly, Calvin and I have not talked about that. First of all, can I just say Calvin usually doesn't talk about this event. I have brought it up vaguely over the years to taunt him in a way of like, and remember this? And he's like, I don't want to talk about that. And now we're doing it on a podcast. So anyway, the people were brought in. How many people? Do you have a guess?
I think it ended up being like 120 people that were in the room. So we had
doubled in size. 20 to 40 people came.
Yeah.
These are people who do not want to be in the Bible study. That's why they weren't there.
Right. Yeah. So then they're in the room. They're all settled down. They all sat down with us. And he gets up on stage and says, you're going to hell. The guest. Unless you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior and Lord right now, you could go out there and die, and you're going to hell. And then our close friend came up after to kind of clean the mess up, because that was insane, and said something about...
Our close friend, I thought that he was the one saying it this whole time.
That was the second. He was the second person to come up.
Okay.
And he was like, essentially said the same thing, but and in a little bit more poetic language.
They were modeling this after a specific teacher, and I can't remember the name of the teacher and evangelist, but he was connected with Kirk Cameron from the Left Behind movies and from Growing Pains or whatever. He's the Christian actor.
Yeah.
God, I wish I could remember his name, but he was an evangelistic pastor who basically like wrote books on how to evangelize. I remember them being into this guy, and he like was the one who would hand out pamphlets that would say you're going to hell. But it was very much like get to the point, tell the people they're going to hell.
Right. Do you remember like the gospel tracts?
Yeah. Like the that's what they were. Books?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
But this guy, so this was also kind of a kid, right? He was also our age, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So he's a kid who is learning that this is what he needs to do, that it's his God-given duty. And and he just like, I guess, verbatim, got the courage one day to do it.
Right. So, oh my God. So then I'm sitting on stage still, or like on the ground. They're up in the, all the people are up in the bleachers. I think you're in the bleachers with everybody else because I was playing music.
Yeah, I was in the bleachers.
And so I'm looking up at everybody and I'm seeing everyone melt, just like everyone in front of my face. Like everyone is like, I'm watching them just like.
You were underscoring this with music?
I maybe. But because after the fact, after our friend was up there.
Yes.
I came up there and was like,
okay,
God is love.
Yeah.
And I tried to just make it like stop. You know what I mean? And then the bell rang and everyone left. And that morning, I was the first time I ever played hooky. Our other friend, Casey, which I hope she'll be a guest eventually. Cause
I think we can leave her name in, right?
Yeah. I hope she'll be a guest because she was like, we were a trifecta in high school.
Yeah.
And she introduced us and she has some crazy, crazy stories from her own, deconversion process as well from another organization of discipleship that we'll let her talk about.
Right.
But, she called me out of school that day because I was like so just like dead. I was
super
like,
Christian kid plays hooky.
It was the worst thing I can think of that I had ever done to date. My mom, she called in as my mom and said, Calvin's not coming to school today.
Okay, wait. Was this the day though that you came back for the math test?
Yes.
Can we tell that story to lighten the mood? Can I try to tell the story?
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know if I remember it. Well, the point is, Calvin did play hooky for like the first 3 hours of school that day.
Three classes. It was a block day, so there were hour half classes.
So it was longer than that. It was almost the whole day.
Yes.
Yeah.
And lunch, right? So, but on Thursdays I had three choir classes, and my last class was math.
Who needs them?
Well,
I'm kidding.
We just didn't really do much, and when we did, it wasn't one of those days. Like it wasn't an important day for me to be there,
right?
And I was also fine at choir,
right? You should have been. Well, anyway, so Calvin does have to come back for his math test.
It was a final or something. Like it was an important test.
But because Calvin is Calvin, there's no other explanation. He came back to the school after playing hooky all day without shoes on.
I was wearing some crocheted socks that I made.
He walked into the high school. The shoes were at home. It was socks only. Went all the way to the school, entered the school, entered the math class with the socks on.
Right. So, okay. And I was a little bit late. I had like I had arrived as the bell was ringing.
And he has the most, forgive me if he's listening, but neurotic math teacher ever. High strung, like just like neurotic to the point math teacher.
And also very Christian.
And very Christian. And pretty outspoken about it, by the way.
Yes. And he was very much predestination guy.
Yes.
So and, we did
but,
not.
But we didn't feel any, like we got cut any slack because we were Christian kids.
No, it was worse. No. Because we also, not only were we both Christians, but we did not believe on a very foundational principle on the same page. So then there's like internal prejudice about that.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is just such a funny minutia to have. But anyway, so Calvin strolls in. The shoes are not an issue. Teacher doesn't notice the shoes. But what Calvin has forgotten is his calculator, mm-hmm. or okay, his calculator, and which he needs, and his pencil. I knew there was a pencil in there. So Calvin has shown up to take a very important math test after playing hooky all day with no shoes, pencil, or calculator. Okay, so this teacher, because he's kooky, has this policy, and I remember this policy because I also had him, that if you had to borrow anything, like a calculator or a pencil, you would leave your shoe at the desk. That, like, what the teacher...
calculators were expensive, so they didn't want you to walk off with them.
Yes, but what teacher in the whole wide world has a policy like you must leave your shoe? Like, that's the most random thing. So he says, yes, I guess you're late, but I guess you can have a calculator and a pencil. You just need to leave your shoe. And then said, Calvin says,
I don't have a shoe. And he said, go to your locker. Why aren't you wearing shoes? And get your shoes. And I said, there are no shoes here. I don't have any shoes in the school.
I brought no shoes to the school. What did he say? Did his face light on fire?
Yes, he said, well, then go home.
And what happened?
And I said, I wasn't here at school today. I came back for this test. I'm not going home. And I can leave a sock. And he said... Then leave a sock.
You left a sock! So Calvin left a sock and took a math test with one sock on and one sock off. And a borrowed calculator.
After this pencil. Crazy morning.
After one of the most traumatic mornings of your
my entire life. Oh, seriously, of my entire life.
Yes. I think he still won't talk about it to this day normally.
Because here's the thing. After that, we had lost essentially... And I'm saying this from that lens of that time. We had lost all leverage in the school. That was something we could not recover from.
Terrible for our brands. And I mean that. I'm sorry, but I mean that. I mean, it was a total brand disaster.
And because we had been working, oh my God, it sounds so gross to say this like this. And we're talking about evangelism and how we were totally disastrous.
We were the worst.
We were the worst. But we had been trying to love people into Christianity for years.
Yeah.
This was our senior year. We were the leaders of the school. Every year there was other seniors who took over the Bible study and the prayer meetings. And this was our baby. Mm-hmm. And somebody came in, taught fire and brimstone with the largest audience that we had of this thing that we had created and done weekly for years. Mm. And demolished any kind of message of hope and love that we were trying to do in a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
And it was devastating.
It was, but I have to say, Calvin, to be fair, while we were leading with love, like, our message was still the same.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It was still like, you better believe in Christ or perish. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, yeah.
So who's more nefarious? Was it us or him? You know, that's the question. Or a question.
Yeah.
But we were taught to do this way. And
yeah, I mean, and it bears repeating that we were like 17 years old. And like, had been indoctrinated by adults. I mean, the adults, I don't know. What's their excuse? I don't know what their excuse is. They had probably also been indoctrinated as children. It's generational.
For thousands of years.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know. There is a flip side to this.
Please show me.
Okay. The flip side is that we actually believed that if people didn't give their lives to Jesus, they would go to hell. And we didn't want people to go to hell. It's the thing with my mom.
Yeah.
Like, my mom still is afraid I'm going to hell and will still reach out to me about it. What is she doing? I know I've already talked about this on the podcast, but she's evangelizing. She's witnessing. Mm-hmm. I know, because I know my mother, that she is not doing this from a place of, like, hatred.
Or that she's trying to manipulate you in a way that she knows more about this than you, or, like...
Right. She's like, afraid that I'm going to hell.
Yeah. And that fear is sincere.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until... let's put it this way. I unwound... This is how deep it goes. I unwound my faith in college,
mm-hmm.
Which might be yet another episode I'd like to talk about, the falling away. I took an astronomy class, and it like hit me from the side. Mm-hmm. But I unwound my faith. It wasn't until therapy years later where I started undoing the layers of thinking I was going to hell. Or that I would go to hell if I stopped believing in Jesus. My therapist would say, do you think you're going to hell?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a fair question.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, you know, let me get back to you, basically.
Mm-hmm. When was that?
Grown-ass adult is when it was. I was like 23. Now I have to reveal my age. No, I'm just kidding.
Tell me.
We already have 6 years ago.
Yeah.
6 to 7 years ago, I was essentially sitting in a therapist's office in New York City working through the fear of me going to hell. So, you know.
And I'm sure that there are people who are listening now who still think that they're going to hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if that's you, call us. Tell us your story. We want to know what you're going through. The number is listed on the description somewhere, and
yeah.
Or send us a text or an email. But we understand what that feels like, and that is shitty.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm not gonna say, you know, with a stamp of approval that I really fucking know where everyone's going after we die. I have some ideas of what I'd like to see, but I think another part of what happens is that people who have died or have out-of-body experiences and come back say about these visions
mm-hmm.
that they've had, and like holy people talk about visions from God, and they say the prophets and all these things, and so it's like, I haven't had one of these experiences, and so I can't say, but you know, if the body's going to shut down, I can imagine a couple of reasons why somebody would have a hallucination.
Right.
And yeah. They come back, write a book about it, and then they've perpetuated, you know, the ideas that they were probably taught for their entire life about what heaven looks like.
Right.
I'm going to come after those people. Let's talk about it. You know what? A little bit of a tangent. Last night I went to the grocery store and I got this. Homeschooling, the Old Schoolhouse Family Education Magazine, winter 2020 through 2021. I got it because I just recently was homeschooling my nephews and teaching them about Christopher Columbus, and it said the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria mm-hmm. on the front of this thing. So I bought it for a whole $10 so that I could see what they're teaching homeschool students in the year 2020 and 2021.
Yes.
And they literally make Columbus a motherfucking hero in this play that they then follow, and a Christian hero at that, that God granted them access to be able to discover the second world, and then followed up with treats that are shaped in the form of the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria Rice Krispie treats.
Brainwashing.
With sugar. And
yeah.
I have a bit of a qualm with sugar, not only as one of a huge portion of the slave trade and how black people were integrated into the Western world, but also as an addictive substance that they not only use in things like this magazine, the Old Schoolhouse Family Education Magazine, does not say anything about Christianity on the front except for a Bible verse, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Proverbs 22:6.
Okay, that, you know what can go to hell? That book. That book is going to hell. That's where it's going. Ew, I hate
this. Was on the shelf at the grocery store. And so I was talking to, again, my partner last night about this, and he was like, listen, you need to put that away. It's riling you up. And I'm like, I have to do something about this. And he said, you know, snacks were his favorite part of VBS as well. And like that the brainwashing comes from so many different directions, and using sugar and positive reinforcement and encouragement as ways to incentivize the things that we were brought up in. Mm-hmm. And the dangerous ways that we were taught and trained not only to become self-deprecating, self-hating individuals who were also infecting the world that we lived in with that same self-deprecation, mm-hmm. same self-hatred, that we must lower ourselves, that we must become less, that we must hate our flesh, which is
that awful. God himself finds us worthy of hell.
Right. That God himself finds us worthless.
Yeah.
Until he somehow miraculously changes us from all of our nature, which I tend to believe that we must harness our nature now, that we must harness our nature and understand how we are created and understand how our bodies and minds work through science and study and trial and error, and in order to really see what existence is, to look around at nature and understand that cycles happen, and that we need rest, and that we need forgiveness, and that honesty is going to be the most powerful way to navigate this planet and to navigate life itself. Mm-hmm. And that if we weren't all lying to each other all the time and gaslighting each other, and that you know, people were open to say, you know, I've never had a homosexual thought in my life, but you do you, like. Or, you know, and like if that was just how people would act, I think we would be in a much better place as a human race.
Yeah.
And to say, like, I honor you for your experience, even though it's not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, how do I grieve with you? How do I celebrate with you as a fellow brother, as a fellow human? We're sharing in this experience, and your experiences are valuable to me, even if I don't share them.
Yeah.
And that is not what my experience was growing up at all.
No. It wasn't how we were taught to relate to others. It wasn't, yeah.
Tangent. Okay. Can we go back to you coming out to me?
Sure. Well, I don't know if that's going back to that. We hadn't really gotten there.
But I mentioned it, and I want.
I love this podcast is listed under comedy, and we've spent the whole time talking about hell. So, hope you find that funny. Yeah, some of it is laughable in hindsight. But me coming out to you, see, I do this thing where I like block out parts of my memory banks, I think. But can I tell you what I remember? Finally coming to terms with the fact that I was gay and that I was ready to tell people, and then telling you, and then in a manner of speaking, you, I feel, weren't ready to receive it. Would you say?
Yes. Also, I came to you a couple years prior.
Yes.
And
do you want me to tell that part?
That I had been struggling with homosexuality
and gay porn. I gotta add that part in there.
You think it's so funny, don't you?
Well, yeah. We must make a distinction that,
yeah,
he said he was struggling with homosexuality, so that's coming from a Christian standpoint.
I'm trying to work myself out of it. Yeah.
I said I love you, and I don't know, I didn't really say much. I kind of just tried to stay as neutral as I could, if I recall, because I had the secret that I was also gay. So I didn't want to talk in detail about it. So kind of stayed neutral, like kind of like, I guess I'm here for you, or this doesn't change how I feel about you.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I came out to Calvin a number of years later, it was like, I'm not Christian anymore, and I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
And which I think was a surprise. Was that a surprise to you?
I had no idea you were gay at all.
He had no idea I was gay, you guys. incredible.
Well, you had many girlfriends. Many girlfriends.
I know. That's because I didn't think I was gay. I thought that Satan was tempting me, and I was a straight person that had affliction. So, you know, there's that. But tell me why you wanted to discuss the coming out.
Because when you came out to me and you said, I'm gay and I'm going to live this gay life, I was a missionary in Scotland. And we weren't talking a lot at that time because you were living your best New York life and I was living my best Edinburgh life.
Yeah.
And I felt that I was socially and morally eternally obligated because of my occupation as a missionary, that in that time I would be misrepresenting the church, that I'd be misrepresenting God, and I'd be misrepresenting myself if I extended a hand of, I love you and you're doing the best thing. So it was my obligation to the powers that be behind me to say, I love you. I wish you choose something different.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And this created a rift in our friendship for years.
It did. One of the only rifts we've ever had, actually.
Yeah.
We've had a pretty rift-free friendship. but I don't know about years. Maybe a year or two.
I mean, yeah.
But we it was a thing.
But it was still not like, it wasn't was the tense. Same. Yeah.
Because then I resented you. I did. And
I felt like I'd lost you.
Yeah. Because and at the same time, ironically, you were having your own awakening.
Yeah.
I think.
Because for you to have admitted that, or for you to have decided that it was no longer going to be something you were going to quote unquote struggle with.
Yeah.
That you had decided you were going to live this way and that you were going to be open about this and not you have it be something that you were rejecting in your life or calling it sin.
Mm-hmm.
That this was a problem for me to agree with you in that, to stand with you in that.
In a way, you were still evangelizing to me.
Exactly. And I was the worst. And I'm sorry.
Cal, you were doing the best you could. It's okay.
Yeah, it's I'm okay. Still sorry, but I'm like, my sorry is perpetual for that.
I know, but you can let it go. You really can. I'm sorry that when you told me that you were struggling with homosexuality, I didn't say any form of Me Too. I was like, well, good luck with that. Yeah,
because there was also that, too, the part of it that I felt like, how can I trust you with my heart if you don't trust me with yours?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I thought this was open.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard. Well, you know what? We're about 10 years clean from evangelism.
Don't it feel good?
Yes. We're not doing it anymore. And yeah, that's part of the reason to that answer to the question at the beginning of the episode. I think we would both say, no, we're not Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-mm. Should we do testimony time now?
Yeah, I think we should do testimony time. Testimony time. It's our new segment,
yes.
But we have been sort of talking about it throughout the prior episodes, and it is when a caller or a listener calls in and shares their story, and we play it. It's as simple as that. So call in, you know, and let us know what's going on and share your story. But here we go.
Hi there. My name is John, and I grew up a Christian kid, and my story is a little bit actually about after I grew up a little bit. So I came out to my parents when I was 18 after I left the house because I feared more that they would put me through conversion therapy, which those fears turned out to be realized when I came out, and they had an entire immediate family intervention, religious intervention, where my dad tried to get me to join or become a priest. And my sister with her Baptist preacher husband sat there and read off statistics about how every gay relationship was extremely abusive and how I was going to get AIDS and I was going to die and all of this was the Lord's plan, while my other sister was holding my hand with me the whole time. And it was a really difficult moment for me because all of my fears had, of course, been realized in that moment. Now, this is, let's see, 10 years later, I'm married to my husband, and we have a lovely life. We have lovely animals. We're on an adoption journey, and my parents walked me down the aisle at my wedding. And so it's a little sappy, but it can change for some people. And I understand that it doesn't for others, but I'm very, very lucky, and I wanted to share that story with you. Thank you. Have a great day.
Oh, that makes me want to cry.
Yeah. It's like a very vulnerable story.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I would say ends beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that John also called back and said that he just wanted to say that, like, he hoped that didn't sound like braggy or in any way. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And that there is still, it was still very difficult, and it is still difficult at times to work through the stuff that he went through. But I honestly connect with so much of what he shared.
Mm-hmm.
From, like, especially like the waiting, till I was older to come out because I feared conversion therapy. And then it's like this intuitive thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Well, not necessarily intuitive. I mean, we watched these things happen to other people.
Yeah.
We watched these things happen to other people.
Yeah. I just mean for me, like I sensed that it was not a safe place in my home.
No.
And then yet when I did come out, it felt like all my fears were realized because I wasn't like embraced, so to speak. But you know, there's hope there too, right?
Yeah.
That he was walked down the aisle.
Yeah. And I think another part of this is that our families are also on their own journey, and it's been said that people don't really know how to relate to other people until they live with them and they do life with them. And I think one of the things, maybe this is a little bit divisive for me to say, but one of the things that separates, I think, more conservative leading ways of thought as opposed to more progressive ways of thought is, or liberal ways of thought, is a regular encounter with people who are different than you. And when we look at the map or, you know, statistics or different kinds of occupations, whether they have or do not have benefits attached to them, that's separate. Gosh. Circumstances change people.
Right.
And so when you have lived an entire life where everyone around you believes the same things, looks the same way, talks the same way, you tend to think more insular, in a more insular way. But when you have lived in such a way where you value and cherish the opinions and perspectives of people who are different than you, particularly from a young age, but people like you and I, and other, where we learned about other people later in life, when you value other people or different kinds of opinions or ways of life or ways of thinking, you tend to be more embracing of liberal mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him and for us, well, not for you, I'm sorry. And I'm still working through this with my family. I don't know. They haven't rejected me, not in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
I came out to my mother and father 3 years ago on December 5th in a show where we kissed on screen as a part of a video, you and I. And then I had asked you to come in and be an actor in a short film that I did. And so I came out to them that night. And then But I came out to them, to my mother, like 2 weeks ago as not believing in hell, which was kind of a similar milestone. Because I think that that's been something that I haven't been had the courage to say to her. And she, again, didn't reject me, didn't embrace my mentality, but didn't sever anything, you know? And so everybody's experience is different. And I think my mom heard me and asked me some questions and left the conversation open-ended. And I guess that is to say that our growing up, our parents, we just assumed that, that they were kind of set and done in in their mindset and who they are and what they believed in, and that people older than us were just like, we were changing, but they were staying the same. And I would submit and postulate that perhaps they're changing, if not as much as us, but they're changing alongside us. And and to not give up hope on them.
It reminds me of, I mean, what you're saying and the way you're saying it reminds me of Harvey Milk. I don't know if you know Harvey Milk, but they feature it in the film. He's telling this, which might, this might be controversial, but he's telling people to come out, come out. And his point is like, until we come out, our families don't, may not know a gay person. So their minds may not change, you know? And that's just like as a general, like idea, but it's true for me. My family didn't really know a gay person until I came out. So
yeah, same. And I think, like, if you are teetering on the edge of coming out, find the way to do it in a way that, like, your safety is priority. Like, don't risk your safety, your immediate safety. Find find a way to be in a safe place.
Or wait until, you know, wait until you are.
But I do think that passively waiting, because there are lots of people who die this way in conflict and die lying, living a life of lies. And that's been happening since the dawn of time, you know? And I don't, and I wouldn't necessarily say that cognitive dissonance is the best and most healthy way to live a life. But you can't accomplish a goal or a dream. A dream is just this ephemeral thing until it's a plan, and a plan is a dream that's on the calendar. So every day, figure out ways, what it looks like, how you're going to do it, strategize. Maybe don't write things down if you're living in that kind of situation where those things could be found prematurely. But surround yourself with a loving community. Go find out who those people are. Go find a community who can help you. Professional help if need be, or close friends if that's easier. It took me, I think, 3 or 4 years to finally come out to my family when I was already coming out to my friends and dating, actually. And I don't know if my parents or anybody in my family is listening to this, but like, that's been my journey. And I think for me, it is healing to be honest and open. And I want other people to experience the same and open and honest dialogue. But I was experiencing, and again, kind of open with my superiors at church, about the fact that I was quote unquote struggling with homosexuality for years before I decided that, you know what, I'm gonna stop hating myself now, because I don't think God wants me to hate myself. Apparently He loves me, and so and I said, God, if you want to do something about this, be my guest. You can do anything. But I've been fasting, starving myself, praying for years for you to change this thing inside of me, and you're not doing it, and I'm done hating myself. So there's that. And that was when it shifted for me. And it was at a similar time. Maybe I had gotten the courage to do that because of you coming out to me, actually. And I was just like, you know, this isn't freedom that I'm living in, and I have the power to change that. And so slowly but slowly, I came out to more friends. I slowly left my Christian community here in Kansas City, and I found a new community. And that didn't happen because I waited around. It happened because I needed a new community, and I went out and found people that I actually liked, who I actually liked being around. And that doesn't happen passively. You have to actively do that.
I mean, I fled to New York. Literally you, fled. I flew on a plane. So. Yeah.
And you went to a place where you felt that you could be safe.
Yeah.
You changed your circumstances. You changed your surroundings. I changed my circumstances.
Coming out was very freeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the...
So make a plan. That's all I'm saying. If you're listening and you need help, or you're figuring things out, or you know people who are, be a safe place.
Yeah. A plan can give you hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be now. And there doesn't even have to be a set time,
all people. I definitely, it was incremental. It came in stages.
Right.
I found an emotional support group, like in friends, in people that I love doing life with. I found an emotional haven inside of them for years before I came out to my family or my other friends.
Right.
And actually in the process of this podcast is the first time that I feel like I'm saying these things in a way that anybody has access to
the outer level.
Right.
The outer circle.
So we're talking weeks here. You know what I mean?
I did the outer circle in a Facebook post, and that was only in 2015, 2016 was when I did that. And I was like, fuck it. I want everyone to know. And it was a Facebook post, but that changed my life. That Facebook post changed my life.
Yeah.
But that is to say, like you said, it happened in stages, and it takes time. But, thank you.
This is enough
for calling in. Yes, this is enough for today. Let's do a really quick praise report end on a happy note. Praise report is when we, in the Christian tradition, say something that we are grateful for. My praise report is for the freaking math sock shoe pencil calculator story. That's one of my favorite stories of all time. It's so quintessentially Calvin, and he took a whole math test with one sock on, and he almost certainly didn't study for the math test. I don't know if he needed to, but
I don't come on. No, math and I are friends.
Yeah, you probably didn't need to.
I probably didn't need to. I think he did fine on the test. praise report. All of my holiday gift boxes are sold out. Which is exciting. I mean, I only had 25 available, but I put together a little mishmash of things from different women, LGBT, and youth creators here in Kansas City, and put together a holiday box with a virtual concert that is exclusive to box holders, and which is fun for me because there's like incense and soap and shea butter and tea and chocolates inside the box. And I just love curating all sensory experiences for my audience. And so it feels like a little bit of a restoration of my relationship with my audience, because that's the thing, that kind of thing I like to do. So that's my praise report.
That's wonderful. Good. Yeah. Well, I mean, this one has been a journey, I gotta say. We went deep.
We went all the way in.
We went all the way in, and it's too late now. It's on the books. So, hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening, for sharing. Please subscribe to the podcast. Please rate the podcast. If you think that this message needs to get out to more people, hit the 5 stars, because somebody hates us and put 1 star.
Yeah, someone put 1 star, and it brought our rating down, and it hurt my feelings.
So, yeah, I most really importantly, don't care, but it hurts.
Calvin doesn't care. Calvin doesn't care. I do. Anyway, we love you all.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Please continue to do that, and I will respond to the messages as well.
Yes. All right, Cal. Talk to you soon.
We were Christian kids.
We were Christian kids.
Bye.
Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. We were Christian kids. No, I mean like really, 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 really Christian.